biblical soul care class, and we've been discussing the last several weeks the fear of man. And the first week we just identified what the fear of man is. We tried to get a better grasp on kind of a definition of it, see the problem, just identify that in our own lives. Many of us may not have thought about this being an issue, and so just try to highlight that. We identified a couple definitions. Ben Marshall said the fear of man exists when someone worships someone else, attempting to achieve acceptance or avoid rejection. So we worship something else or someone else, and the reason we do that is we want to be accepted by them, or we're afraid we'll be rejected by them. So that's not something we should do. That indicates we do fear people more than we do God. Another definition by Ed Welch: the fear of man can be summarized in this way. We replace God with people instead of a biblically guided fear of the Lord. We fear others. So some other words that we might hear for the fear of man would be codependency, peer pressure, maybe a people pleaser. Some people say, well, I just have low self-esteem. All right, those are all kind of synonyms for this topic that we're trying to discuss. And then last week, we got into investigating it. All right, we're kind of trying to do some diagnostic tests. Where do we see this in our own life? And we wanted to do that so that when we can spot it, we can deal with it a little easier. And we just had some examples from the Bible. We looked at Saul, and we saw that he had a little big man complex. He was little in his own eyes, but he was the king of Israel. God had made him the king, and he had to go out and fight the Amalekites. He won this battle, and he really wanted to take the glory for that win, and didn't give glory to God for it. But he viewed himself, he wanted the people to view him as the strong leader, the one that conquered, right? But in his own eyes, he was small, so he made a monument for himself so that people would see him, right, instead of the Lord. And so the conclusion is that sometimes we build monuments in our own lives, and that's a sign that we're trying to do something to cement our own legacy, right? This is not something we want to give God glory for. We want to receive it for ourselves. Just like Saul, we build not physical monuments, but just ones that, we work real hard to maybe establish a business. We like to give money so people can see that. We raise our kids in such a way that it reflects well on us. Oh, those are all, can be good things, but done for the wrong reasons, we receive the glory and not God. So we see that example of Saul also gave us another example. In that same situation, when he fought the Amalekites, he disobeyed. God told him to wipe everybody out, kill everybody, kill all the animals, take all the spoil and destroy it. And he didn't do that. And his reason for not obeying was what? Remember? He said, I feared the people and I didn't obey. So we saw there that we obey what we fear. All right, Saul feared the people, so he obeyed them instead of obeying the Lord. And he wasn't the good example that he should have been to the people. He was afraid of how they might react. This was all good stuff. Why can't we keep it? Do we have to obey the Lord? So when we obey what we fear, especially when we fear losing our influence or power, kind of like Saul did. And if you find yourself a slave to others because of what they think about you, that's a good indication then that you're fearing man. And then we looked at Peter. Peter's another good example to us. He denied Jesus, obviously, at Jesus' trial. A slave girl came up to him and says, aren't you one of Jesus' disciples? He denied it. Later, they were sitting around a fire. There was a group of them. Aren't you a disciple? No, I'm not. I don't know the man. And then finally, somebody who's a relative of the person that Peter cut the ear off of in the garden earlier. Aren't you? Didn't I see you there? No, that wasn't me. All right, he denied Jesus. He was scared, or he's ashamed, really, and scared for his life, I think, to be identified with Christ. And if that's our tendency sometimes, we're fearing man, right, and not fearing God. I was thinking of Hebrews 13:13, where it talks about bearing the reproach of Christ. We have to go outside the camp with him. He was crucified outside the city, outside the camp, where people inside, that's where you're accepted, maybe, right? Jesus was not accepted. He was killed, and that's where we need to be. We need to identify with Christ, even when it's not popular. And when we don't do that, that's a dead giveaway that we are fearing man and not fearing God. Another example that we had of Peter was in Galatians. We saw that Peter had taken a trip up to Antioch from Jerusalem, and he was living among Gentile Christians, eating with them, fellowshipping with them. He didn't seem to have a problem eating the food that the Gentiles ate. He wasn't eating kosher. And then some people from Jerusalem came up, from James, from the home church there, and all of a sudden he withdrew from the Gentiles. He didn't want to fellowship with them. He seemed to be ashamed of eating non-kosher and didn't know what the report would be back to Jerusalem. He feared, it says in that passage, he feared the circumcision party. And it was becoming a problem because it was contagious. Other people around him, even Barnabas, started to pull back and not eat with the Gentiles, and it was causing a division in the church. There was a crisis of the gospel, really, and Paul had to stand up to Peter and rebuke him publicly for that, all right? So we can see that we find ourselves making decisions that are completely out of step with our Christian character, what should be our Christian character. Why did Peter make that decision? He knew better, all right? We do that to preserve our good name, maybe, our reputation that he thought he had with the Jews back in Jerusalem. And when we find ourselves in that situation, we too are we're fearing man. So those were some examples that we looked at from last week. We're going to continue on. If you have a handout, it's question number 17. I don't know what page number you have, but it'd be question number 17, probably page three or something like that. Page four. And Proverbs 29:25. I think this is the only place in the Bible where it says the fear of man, just like that. We got other places that we've talked about where it's obviously indicating that, but here it is, just lays it out, okay? Proverbs 29:25, the fear of man lays a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord is safe. This is a great verse to, it just puts it in a nutshell. There you go, right? To memorize, to take someone there if they're struggling with this issue. Look, here it is in a nutshell, Proverbs 29:25. So just let's think about that for a little bit. What makes a trap or a snare effective? Do we have anybody that's ever trapped animals in here? Joe, anybody else? Okay, Joe. No.
It's concealed.
Yeah.
The snare is.
It's concealed. You don't notice it.
Good bait.
There's got to be something there that attracts the animal to that snare sometimes, right?
Or you just put it where it's going to be going.
Where they're going to travel over top of it. But yeah, there's some bait involved. If you're thinking about fishing, obviously, that's in some ways that's a snare. You're going to hide the hook with something else, right? And snare it, so there's some bait involved. It's got to be attractive somehow to that area. So then what bait, or what's the temptation then, if the fear of man is a snare or a trap, what is that that lures us to that? Why do we get caught in that trap so often?
Sin.
Sin? Okay. Well, what's attractive about the sin then?
Pleasing people. And approval of people.
Approval of people.
A lot of times it's the easier path.
Yeah, it seems like the path of least resistance sometimes, doesn't it?
I don't have conflict that way. I don't have strife. This is easier for me if I just go this way.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's some good bait there. It's just, it seems like an easier path. We're obviously sinning. It's easier. It seems easier to please people than it does to displease them. Think about Saul, right? In the example we saw last week, what was the bait, I think, that led him into fearing the people and obeying the people instead of God?
Sometimes for me, I lose track that God's watching me all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I know people are watching me all the time. I see them. You know, I don't see God, so I lose track that, no, he's watching too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. And that comes with we're going to get there, growing in our fear of the Lord. We're growing in our knowledge that, you know, he really sees everything I do.
Want to be the boss, want to be independent. God.
Yeah. So some other, I think, bait that lured Saul into doing this was he thought he could maybe please God and please the people. Maybe if I come right down the middle, I can get away with not having to confront the people, and then I can still pacify God and try and obey him too. That got him stuck in this trap. So what is, just thinking about the analogy again of an animal caught in a trap or a snare, when someone's caught in a snare of the fear of man, what illusion might they have about themselves? Just think about an animal caught in a snare or a trap. Is that animal...
No way out.
There's no way out, but...
Chew your leg off.
Chew your leg off. There is... Is there... I guess it depends on the trap, right? But is there a certain amount of... Does it kill the animal instantly? No, right? Is there a certain amount of freedom that animal might have still? As long as the chain is, or as long as the cable is that they're snared to, maybe they have a little freedom.
Hey, not to get too far on this analogy, but many times you come up to a snare that has an animal in it, they're still alive.
Yeah.
They just don't. But they're caught, but they just maybe not fully grasp that.
Yeah. So there, you might have this illusion that, okay, I'm not dead yet.
Yeah.
I'm still breathing here. I have a little bit of freedom. I can travel, you know, within a 3-foot circle. Maybe it's not as bad as I think it is. Maybe I can get out of it on my own. A lot of these things might go through your head when you've been ensnared. You make excuses. It's not as bad as it seems. I got in this on my own. I can get out of it on my own. But according to Proverbs 29, this is question number 20. How can we be safe then from the snare? There's false hope in being in the snare because we think we can survive it, really at least to death. How do we avoid it altogether according to this verse?
Well, if we trust the Lord and if he tells us to go a certain way or to not go a certain way, then we should believe him and obey.
Yeah. So, trusting in the Lord, and if the snare is the easy path, right? And it's really, it seems easier because to please people, in a way, pleases ourselves, right? So there's somewhat of a selfish motive always in pleasing people. If we're pleasing people to honor the Lord, that's a good thing, right? And there's no selfish motivation in that. But if we're pleasing people because there's some type of reciprocity, it comes back to you somehow. How does then then being obedient or trusting the Lord, how does that mitigate that, I'm trying to say, that trap or that snare? If we're trusting in the Lord, how does that keep us from even going close to this trap? That keeps us safe, Proverbs says.
I think you need to premeditate what you're prone to, what can snare you,
mm-hmm.
and be looking for one thing. And then listen to the Spirit within you.
Yeah, trusting in the Lord that maybe I don't understand why you want me to be obedient in this area, but I'm going to do it anyway. I think trusting in the Lord that that serving others and not serving myself is really the obedient path to take. And I think when we do that, we become less selfish. And that selfishness is really the bait that wants to attract us to pleasing other people. And trusting in the Lord and not in ourselves leads us away from that snare, leads us clear of that snare. So to me, that's probably the main key, is our trusting and our obedience mitigates our selfishness. And that selfishness leads us away from being trapped and ensnared in that. So any other thoughts on that? Any other ideas that where we can be safe? Yeah.
I was thinking too, like if you think about a trap and a dog gets caught in it, which is not what you were attempting to, but a lot of times when you try to rescue, they attack.
Yeah.
Because they don't know whether you're there to help or hurt. And I think that's part of the trusting. You have to trust the person that's trying to help you.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than lashing out.
And this verse implies that we have a relationship with the Lord, that we know the Lord.
Yeah.
It's really hard to trust somebody you don't know, that you haven't seen their character. You don't know if they'll follow their word. But if you've seen that and you know that about that person, it is easier to trust that
mm-hmm.
person. So it implies you're in the word
yeah.
and you know who the Lord is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
And probably the famous verse in Proverbs, is Proverbs 3:5-7, and say, trust in the Lord with all thy heart, and he will make your life straight. And it say, fear the Lord, the seven. So we need
wisdom. Yeah.
Yeah. So that. That's what our Bible, the Bible is our map in life.
Yeah, it's our guide, it's our lamp. So let's put some flesh on this idea. What about an example where you've been ensnared or entangled in a mess because you've feared other people? You got caught in that trap. You fell for the bait. And you got snared in it. And maybe think of some other biblical examples too. If you can't think of one personally, maybe one out of Scripture where someone was feared man and got snared and caught in the trap. As we're thinking about that, what did your fear of others promise you that made changing your conduct or conviction or character seem like a good idea at that moment, right? That's the bait. This seems like a good idea. It's not. Yeah, Alan.
I'd say when Abraham went down to Egypt with his wife, Sarah.
That's exactly what I was thinking about in Genesis 12. He went down to Egypt, and he was, go ahead and explain that a little bit.
Well, his wife was actually his sister, but he wanted her to say that, you know, he was not married to her, so that somebody would attack him and take his life.
Yeah, he feared because she was beautiful, he said, that they're going to see you and kill me so they can marry you. And he was afraid, really, of his life. And so he lied. The easy way out for him, he thought, was to disown his wife somehow. He thought that was a good idea, right?
What about David and Bathsheba?
How so? How was that?
Because he had his Philistine kill Bathsheba's husband to cover his sin, and because David wanted Bathsheba, and he was married to the other man. So
yeah, he feared being found out, and he tried to fix that himself. And lies piled up on more lies. Obviously, that was, yeah, he was ensnared big time there. I think the interesting thing about Abraham, though, is that he did it twice. Just a few chapters later, he did the same thing again, right? He feared, I can't remember what king it was, another king, and did the same thing. And the king took his wife, and nothing happened, but... yeah, that fear was there again for Abraham. He got caught in another snare or trap. Any other examples? You can...
Didn't Aaron make a golden calf because he feared how the people were acting, even though Moses had told him?
Yeah, Moses was up on the mountain, mm-hmm. and they said, we can't see God, make us a God we can see. Right? Yeah, he did. He said, he probably thought I have to pacify these people. They're gonna revolt. What am I gonna do?
I also think of Esther, where she was tempted with fearing losing her life. And when she was presented with the truth, and after praying and after seeking the Lord in it, then she actually chose what was right. Mm-hmm. But it was laid before her to fear man and what might happen to her before obeying. So I think that's kind of a flip side where she did end up obeying.
Yeah, that's a good example of, because she said, I could go to the king, if he doesn't accept me, then he could kill me. I'm afraid I could lose my life for this. Yeah.
What about Adam and Eve, the Garden of Eden?
What did they fear?
Because they ate the tree of good and evil, and God told them not to, and when they did, they was afraid and hid from God.
Yeah, you bring up a good point that the fear that we have is being exposed, I think, right? They feared being, they were naked before God, they were naked before each other, and then they sinned all of a sudden, and they feared being seen, right? Exposed to other people. So a lot of times the root of our fear of other people is trying not to let other people see who we really are, right? We gotta keep that from people. I'm afraid of what they might think of if they knew who I really was. So that's a good point, Josh.
David, I was thinking of a personal example, like when we first came to church here years ago, I think I wanted to make myself look a little better, and I was gossiping about somebody. Just because I feared not looking good enough. You know, like when we're gossiping, we're fearing something. And anyway, somebody here called me out on it, and I'd never ever before in my life been called out on gossip. And that was like, I don't remember, it might have been somebody in this room, but that was so memorable. You know, that somebody was like, No, you're not gonna do that.
So did you realize that was a trap that you were in, that you were
No, I had never been at a church where they called out gossip as a sin. So like, I mean, of course I'd read about it in the Bible that gossip is a sin, but nobody had ever called that out as I was speaking, you know, like, how dare you? I mean, like, she shut the conversation down, and that was, we were in the women's bathroom, here. Anyway, like, it can, fear of man is tricky. Like, mm-hmm. it can sneak up in us, and we can be trying to push somebody else down.
Yep.
To make ourselves feel better about who we are.
That's a good example. Thanks for sharing that.
David, in verse 23, mm-hmm. one's pride will bring him low. I think when we fear man, we're actually very proud of ourselves.
Yep.
And over in verse 6 of the same chapter, an evil man is ensnared in his own transgression. So oftentimes our own pride is what ensnares us.
Yep. And that's
for me.
That's one thing, if you read this book by Lou Priolo, Pleasing People, he has several chapters on what it means to be proud and what it means to be humble. And it does a really good job. It takes a long time to work through that and work that out. So that's good. Good point in pointing that out, that pride and selfishness is that bait.
I can think of a couple of personal examples as well. When I have to make a decision that's going to affect people at work, whether they're little people or big people, you know, and in my pride, I want people to approve me, like me, respect me, think that I'm awesome, and all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. And so that if I care about that too much, I will make I will try to please this person, but then the effect of that for the rest of the staff or the students is it makes everything more complicated mm-hmm. and then its problems tend to multiply versus when I make a decision based on what the actual issue is and it's the right decision, even if it's going to make this person mad or mm-hmm. this group mad, but at least it's going to be what's right. What I believe is right. So there's those instances, and with the little people, it's like, I don't want to deal with that problem. If I look away and I don't want to deal with that, the temptation is it'll be easier, but it always gets worse because I didn't uh-huh. address it here, and then it becomes a bigger issue.
Yeah.
So those are things where the fear of man, even with the kids, like wanting to be seen in a positive light by students is like, which is mm-hmm. really ridiculous to say, but it's there, and mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't want to deal with that thing right now, and cause then it'll be hard, and there's all kinds yeah. of things that I'll rationalize, and that's just the fear of man. And in my, again, like Justin said, is in my pride, I want to be viewed in a positive light, mm-hmm. and so I will either ignore something or I'll make a decision that I know, like, oh, I'm probably gonna regret that later. And then I still do it because, mm-hmm. so there's all kinds of examples and for me too.
No, it's really good because I think the trap, like you're saying, a lot of times is it seems easier to go down this road, but in the end it just snowballs and things get more and more complicated because every time you're pleasing this person, you're displeasing other people instead of taking the pain for the short amount, right? And doing the right thing, and then whatever happens down river isn't quite as bad. And that's a hard lesson to learn sometimes, but I think I'm learning it right now in the last couple weeks. But yes, that's good. So then the flip side of it, you already mentioned Esther, how she feared the king, but then chose to be obedient to the Lord, and how that was a blessing. Any other examples? This might be a little easier to come up with. By God's grace, when have you made the right choice and chose to trust in the Lord instead of take this bait for fearing man? Yeah. And it's not bragging because by God's grace you did it. Right? We're not asking you to pat yourself on the back. But it can be encouraging to see situations where it didn't seem like there was a good way out of this, but I trusted the Lord anyway, and he was faithful, and I avoided a trap that I could have been stuck in.
I've seen it in the men here at Flint Hills often, as simple as, you know, our security team and making sure that we're safe. I've seen it in Pastor Dave
mm-hmm.
and going and talking to people who really were wolves and taking care of the flock, that takes guts.
Mm-hmm.
And the Christian version of that is it takes the Lord.
Yeah.
It's really, you know, that takes a lot of humility and a lot of trust in the Lord. So the men here in the church, I've seen that often.
That's a good example.
Going back to what Brock was talking about, school, when I first started teaching, I would let a lot of little stuff slide. That'll be easier if I just, but it
mm-hmm.
would just snowball. So I don't do that now and no more. But I'm upfront with what my expectations are, and I actually find that the students respond better
mm-hmm.
than if I just let these little things slide and then it snowballs.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but if they're I'm upfront with this is what it's going to be, and then I'm stay to that, it, usually the students respond much better to that.
Mm-hmm. So just to conclude this little part, the desire to please man seems like the path of least resistance, and it's enticing, but its end is a trap that we need to be free from. So think about that as you root this out in your own life. What traps can I fall into? What bait do I fall for? Why do I do that? How can I nip it in the bud, so to speak? How can I trust the Lord next time and avoid the ramifications of a poor choice, of fearing man? So I want to move on to another example. This is a really stinging one here. John chapter 12. John is just making a comment here about some Jewish leaders, and he says, "Nevertheless, many even of the authorities believed in him," being Jesus, right? "But for the fear of the Pharisees, they did not confess it, so that they would not be put out of the synagogue. And here's the reason: for they loved the glory that comes from man more than the glory that comes from God." Wow. Okay. So, who were some of these people? Who were some of these Jewish leaders, maybe, that we know from the other verses in John that John might have been talking about?
Nicodemus
probably was one. We know from John chapter 3 that he spoke to Jesus, and John chapter 7. There's a little place in there where the authorities were trying to haul Jesus in. Like, you know, if he's blaspheming, we want to bring him in and have a trial. And they sent out a couple Pharisees or something, I think, and they came back without Jesus. And they said, "What happened? How come you didn't bring him back with you?" And they said, "Well, this teaching is, you know, really amazing." they accused them of "Well, do you believe in Jesus too?" And then Nicodemus kind of halfway stood up for Jesus. He said, "Well, don't you think we should not declare him guilty till we..." There's a trial, right? I mean, just let's give him the chance. But I don't think Nicodemus ever really came out and said, you know, I believe in Jesus. And I think this is why, right? Who's another person maybe that we know of?
Joseph.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are the two that I can think of. Maybe there are more. But in John chapter 19, it says this. This is after Jesus died. John 19:35 says, "After these things, Joseph of Arimathea, who was the disciple of Jesus," and then it says, "but secretly for fear of the Jews, asked Pilate that he might have the body of Jesus, and Pilate gave him permission." And I think Nicodemus was also there with him and helped bury Jesus. So those two, I mean, they did eventually, right? Publicly, they're helping, but that was the accusation there. They feared the Jews. So we have two examples at least. Why did these Jewish leaders then fear? What did John say? What was the reason? There's two reasons. What was the first reason? It seemed like the main reason, maybe. They didn't want to confess Jesus.
They didn't want to be put out of the synagogue.
Right. I don't want to lose my place in the synagogue. And this was a real fear, right? This wasn't just theoretically they could kick me out of the synagogue, right? This was happening. John chapter 16, Jesus told the disciples, he said, when talking about what's going to happen in the future, he says, they're going to put you out of the synagogue. And then he says, indeed, the hour is coming when whoever kills you will think he's offering service to God. So that escalated quick, right? You get kicked out of the synagogue, and then they're going to come after your life even. That was a real possibility. And another spot that I really like was in John chapter 9, when Jesus healed this man that was born blind. And he heals him on the Sabbath, and the Pharisees get upset because he healed a man on the Sabbath, and they didn't believe maybe that this man was actually blind, so they haul his parents in and interrogate his parents. And in John chapter 9, if you want to turn there, I'll just read a couple verses, 18 through 23. This is John's commentary here. He said, the Jews did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they called the parents of the man who had received his sight and asked them, is this your son whom you say was born blind? How can he now see? His parents answered, we know that this is our son and that he was born blind, but how he now sees we do not know, nor do we know who opened his eyes. Ask him, he's of age. He will speak for himself. And then, this is good, John gives us a little in parentheses, his parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had already agreed that if anyone should confess Jesus to be the Christ, he would to be put out of the synagogue. So, there's lots of examples where this was not just the theoretical fear, this was something real, right?
And then that son cast out a little bit later.
That's true. Yeah, they kicked him out. They kicked the parents out too, even, just for good measure. So, being expelled from the synagogue was a terrible thing in the society when their identity was wrapped up in that. That was their community, that was their family, and they feared being kicked out of that. But what was the other reason? That seemed to be the main reason. What was the heart reason for why they didn't want to confess Jesus publicly? This is the harder one to swallow, I think. What does John say there?
They love the glory that comes from man more than the glory that comes from God.
Yeah, ouch, right? No, that's not my reason. I'm afraid of getting kicked out of the synagogue. And John said, no, really, you want the glory of man more than you want the glory of God. Mm-hmm. You don't think that about Nicodemus, maybe, or Joseph, or yourself, right? But remember, we saw in Proverbs, fear of man lays a snare. There's a snare there. And they were caught in that. But whoever trusts in the Lord is safe. Jesus, he also said in John chapter 5, he was talking to these Pharisees that weren't believing in him, and he said then in chapter 5, verse 44, how can you believe when you receive glory from one another and do not seek the glory that comes only from God? So wanting praise from your peers meant that they didn't want to acknowledge Jesus openly. And they were forfeiting the praise that comes from God. We don't think of it that way. We can't serve two masters, the Bible says, right? But we want to try. So if we're seeking praise from man, we cannot be seeking praise from God at the same time. Although we hope we might achieve that, right? any thoughts on that? On the heart issue and why these leaders who confessed Jesus privately weren't willing to do that publicly?
Well, this is the biblical soul care class. So anyone in this room that's discipling someone needs to be very careful that they don't fear that counselee and fears God more. Because it's kind of easy to say, oh, you're afraid of being put out of the synagogue and sympathize with that. Yep. Oh, that's so hard. And there's an element that we should grieve with the challenges that will come with decisions and all of that. But saying to our counselee, verse 43, in their situation, that's where we could fall short mm-hmm. because of fearing their opinion. But we do have to get to that heart issue because that's where it changes, and we have to obey the Lord in that. So we have to be careful. We need to do verse 43 as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. Issue. That's the tough, really hard pill to swallow. That's the really convicting part. Yeah. So just, I don't know if you need to answer this, but what circumstances might you, just think through that. Are you tempted to not confess Jesus openly? Because really what you're saying there is that you love the glory that comes from man more than the glory that comes from God. Think of it that way. Okay? And just do some self-evaluation. And am I falling into that trap also myself? So, just conclusion here, the desire for man's approval over God's demonstrates a lack of trust in him. Yeah, ouch, right? So, I appreciate those verses in John. I think they're very instructive. Just one more example so we get through this today. Being busy. Luke chapter 14. 16 through 20, Jesus is telling a parable here. He said, a man once gave a great banquet and invited many. And at the time for the banquet, he sent his servant to say to those who had been invited, come, for everything is now ready. But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said to him, I have bought a field and I must go and see it. Please excuse me. And another said, I have bought 5 yoke of oxen and I will go and examine them. Please excuse me. And the other said, I have married a wife, and therefore I cannot come. So, what judgment were these people making? This doesn't seem like this is relevant right now, but what judgment were these people making that led them to make up these weak excuses about not attending this banquet? What judgment about the banquet? How are they ranking this? Banquet versus their priorities.
Thought it wasn't as valuable. These other things were more pressing.
Yeah. Even though they weren't great excuses, right? What they're saying is, what I've got to do is more important than this banquet, or this banquet is of less importance than what I'm going to do, what I need to do, they thought. And just as a note here, there's actually 2 invitations, if you notice. The first one comes in the first part of the verse there. A man was going to give a banquet, and he invited many people. So he sent out an invitation. Say, I'm giving a banquet. Just a heads up. RSVP, right? And apparently these men had, right? They'd agreed to come to the banquet. And then when it was time for the banquet to begin, right? It takes time to prepare food. I don't know how long, a couple weeks later. All right, it's ready. Come on, we're gonna have the banquet you agreed to come to. And then it was like, I can't. It's not that important. All right? And so, in this parable, then, what does this banquet represent? Just the big picture representing. You don't have to get into the little details of it.
Banquet would be Christ, eternal life, right?
Yeah, eternal life, going to heaven, right? And so, what lie then does Satan want us to believe so that we don't accept this invitation to this banquet?
It's funny, if you look at their excuses, those all seem like responsible decisions. Like, I can't go feasting, I have to go take care of my work, or I have to take care of my wife.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So I think that those things are more pressing. When if you seek first the kingdom, then these things will be added.
Right.
Well, and they think they may have time later, but you never know. I mean, today is the day of salvation, but if you think, well, I'll put it off, I can do it another time, putting things off can be to your demise.
Yeah, so the deception there is that what we're doing right now is more important. I have commitments that I've made. I think the world wants to convince us that being wealthy or famous or drinking deeply from what the world has to offer is is more important than seeking first the kingdom, to have our mindset on things above than we do on earth. And so, yeah, there's the deception there. When these commitments become habits that control our lives, right? They were controlled by the decisions that they'd made to buy oxen, to buy a field, to get married, which are all fine things to do, right? But they let those commitments or those decisions dictate whether they were going to accept the invitation or not. So, with that in mind, then, how could being too busy or overcommitted, what could that indicate about our fear of man problem? How does this feed the lie that Satan wants us to believe? So, I don't know, maybe you feel like you've got so much going on that I can't say no to things. I don't know. What does that indicate about? How is that an indication that maybe we fear man if we find ourselves maybe overcommitted?
Disease to please.
You may not want to say no to people. Maybe you're have the reputation of the person who gets it done, right? You're the one that gets it done at work or here at church, or you're reliable. People can count on you.
Is it easy to say no to God or no to man?
Well, I think sometimes we think it's easier to say no to God and then it is to man, because people are coming to you and you feel good about wanting to be needed, right? And you feel good about being the one that gets it done, and you're afraid that if I don't say yes to everything, then that reputation will go away. People will, I don't know, there's something there that you're guarding that you don't want to give up.
There's almost an insidious side of this parable as well, because they accepted the invitation.
At first, I think
so
they did.
I think of a believer that actually does love the Lord, but Satan can sideline us in our sanctification journey by pressing pause on us having the most joyous, full cup experience with the Lord. Half-hearted Christians tend to be very miserable because you know about your sin and you want forgiveness, but you don't go far enough to really drink deeply of the joy of the Lord, because you are not investing in your sanctification. You are not committing your way to your scripture reading. You're now overcommitted to everything else as far as the priorities in your life. Mm-hmm. That you cannot drink deeply and feast on right now, not just in eternity, but right now you are not experiencing the deepness and the banquet that is the Lord here.
Yeah, so there's the deception there that we fall into.
And when Satan sidelines you, you're no longer effective in kingdom work.
That's
kind of what I was trying to say. You're sidelined.
Lukewarm.
Thank you.
And what's the reason for that? Really, because we're people pleasers. We're overcommitted. We don't want to tell people no. We have a reputation that we want to maintain. All these reasons kind of go back to that. Go ahead.
Well, especially like what Heather was saying, when there are good things. So like, I'm just so committed to ministry, and just say yes to everything, because people then will see how committed I am to ministries of the church. And so they can be good things, but if we're doing it out of a desire to be noticed or to be perceived as just giving everything for the church, then that's wrong too.
Yeah, so do people hold an opinion of you that you're proud of? Are the ways that you are motivated out of fear of that opinion, that opinion might change? I like the reputation I have here right now. I don't want to hurt that. something to think about. So if you find that your life seems too busy sometimes, just evaluate it. What have I done? Am I overcommitting because I'm afraid of telling people no? I'm afraid of disappointing people. Then just take a look at that. Am I fearing man in certain areas? Just evaluate it. Maybe not. Maybe you are. I don't know. But it's a good time to hit pause and say, let's look at this a little closer. Evaluate it through the grid of fearing man and fearing God. So, we've got about a couple minutes left, and I just want to conclude here. The last page there, there's some charts. These are just, Ben Marshall had these in his handout from the ACBC breakout session, and I thought they were helpful just to, if you're working with somebody, you're discipling somebody, and you see some of these things popping up in your conversation, maybe it's in your own life too, that might be something we need to dig into, all right? And just because you see these, this is just a helpful way to categorize something. Just because we see it in somebody's life doesn't mean, oh, you're a fear of the Lord, or you're a fearing man. I think these need to be exaggerated. These need to be like dominating in your life. We all do these things from time to time, right? But just being ungrateful, discontent, defensive. Someone's always defensive. They're guarding something. We talked about being overcommitted. They're isolated, maybe. They're afraid of letting people know who they really are. They fear that. They're extremely religious. Maybe they're trying to please leaders in the church. Or they're doing that to, there's a front to something else. I don't want you to see this sin, so I'm going to act really religious. Overreacting, indecisive. You can't make a decision because you're going to displease somebody, right? So I can't choose. I'm just indecisive. I don't want to displease somebody. Selfish, overachiever. Those could be some characteristics. When we're trying to diagnose this fear of man. And then some situations. The characteristics or that situations are what we act out. All right, this is happening in somebody's life. Sexual sin. Teenager rebellion, adolescent rebellion, some eating disorders, addictions, the way you dress could be an indication that we're fearing man, doom scrolling, social media, job hopping, just can't keep a consistent job, somebody gets to know you and you just gotta go to the next place or you're not content, anxiety, depression, marriage problems, passive husbands, debt, and anger. So, I don't know. For what it's worth, I thought it was interesting to characterize those that way, just to help and maybe identify that in a counselee or in your own life. So, in conclusion here, we're going to pick this up next week, but perhaps you're struggling with the fear of man and see examples in your own life, much like these that we've looked at over the last 2 weeks. Maybe you've allowed what people think of you to dictate your choices that you make in life. If so, it's important to recognize that you will obey what you fear. Like the Jewish leaders in John, you are functionally living for the praise of man rather than the praise of God. You are obeying man rather than God. So in the next lesson, next week, and then a couple of weeks after that, we're going to see the cure to this problem is gaining a higher view of God. And seeing God as bigger and people as smaller. And we're going to try to learn to fear God rather than men. And that's the easy answer, right? It's like when you watch a football game and the commentators are talking about, what are the keys to the game here? And somebody says, well, Chiefs have to score more points than the Ravens. And like, I knew that, right? That's easy. But how do you do that? So... That's hopefully what we're going to dig into, fearing God, and how we grow in that. So enjoy the rest of your day.